And now for something completely different.
It's a rich man's world. Forget everything you've been told by others before. Get ready for the real deal. The full story. Real talk about money, markets, life. Now, it's The Real Investment Show with Lance Roberts. Presented by RIA Advisors.
Hey, good morning. It's the hump day edition of the Lance Roberts Show. Sorry, not the Lance Roberts Show anymore. We killed that one. It's dead. It's gone.
A horse it's like any other name.
It's like the cows. They're going to kill them all. Because apparently they have flatulence problems that create global warming. It's a real investment show. That's alive. And it's all plant-based. It's a completely vegan show.
Yes.
You know, it's funny. Actually, I was reading an article yesterday. I tweeted this article out yesterday, and it's created this whole hubbub on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so this article was – so a couple of stories that kind of ran together yesterday. The maker – so what kind of butter do you like?
What kind of butter do I like?
What kind of butter do you like? Like if you're going to go to the store and buy real butter, not the it's so good, I think it's butter stuff.
Not the chemical junk.
Exactly. That's one. Do you know that margarine is literally one atom away from being plastic?
Yes.
You know, so, I mean, but when you're going to go to the store and buy butter, what brand of butter do you buy?
I buy the brand my wife tells me to get.
That's always a good start.
If it's up to me, I get Land O'Lakes.
Interesting.
Yeah.
They filed bankruptcy yesterday.
What?
Yes.
No.
They filed bankruptcy yesterday. Yeah, so the maker...
Which means reorganizing, right?
Yes, they are reorganizing. Yeah. They've got too much debt. But it was... So, you know, it's just... Look, that's just a function of life and where we are. But so the tweet goes out yesterday from Jeff Mackey over at the Wall Street Journal. He says, "See, millennials have killed not only milk, but butter." And, you know, of course, this is all part of this idea that there's global, you know, this climate change things. And now millennials are bankrupting Land O'Lakes because basically they don't drink milk anymore.
Because they're boycotting cows.
They're boycotting cows. But what's interesting is so I tweeted back. I said, well, you know, there's a whole lot of other problems with this. And, you know, say goodbye to hamburgers.
Mm-hmm.
And so he tweets back, says there's a difference between milk cows, dairy cows, and meat cows. But that's not the point of climate change. The point of climate change is all cows fart.
Yes.
And that creates problems. And so when we're eating meat, we're required to have more cattle. So more cattle creates more climate change, so forth and so on. But interestingly enough, so talking about going through this debate yesterday, over all this, right, is this whole idea that we've got to be more green. And so there was an actual article out yesterday. I kid you not. A group of scientists have come up with the solution. And it's interesting because I started this about, 3 months ago?
Yeah.
Talking about, hey, if you want to solve the problem with climate change, quit trying to solve the symptoms, go to the problem, which is population. A couple of weeks ago, there was an article out. 11,000 scientists have now issued research saying that we need to control and reduce the population. If you ever read the annual Darwin Awards, don't worry, we're taking care of it ourselves.
Yeah.
People are going, Darwin Awards? Darwin Awards are an annual publication of people that have killed themselves in the most stupid way possible.
Which goes to the theory of Darwinism.
Exactly. You're getting rid of the lowest part of the gene pool.
Right.
So,
too dumb to survive.
Exactly. But so this article, an article out yesterday, a serious research article, serious research here, ladies and gentlemen, that we need to consider having less children and getting rid of your dogs and cats. Now, I'm just waiting for PETA to show up here.
No kidding.
So, and basically, it advocates for more, you know, other issues that we won't get into here on the show, such as what you do with the children. etc. But the point is that, you know, this whole movement has now begun to take the ugly turn that it was destined to take. This is this whole idea of when you get these radical individuals involved in these issues, that they begin to see, well, if we push it this far, how far else can we push it, right? Let's just not get rid of, you know, cows. Let's get rid of dogs and cats and everything else. Why do we have to get rid of dogs and cats, by the way? They eat meat, right? So, again.
Yeah, but they're eating awful. O-F-F-A-L. They're eating the byproducts.
I'm just telling you what the scientists say.
Ah.
They eat meat, yeah. So we have to get rid of dogs and cats. Which, by extension, we need to get rid of tigers and lions and bears. Oh, my.
Oh, my.
You see, so really, here's, ladies and gentlemen, if you follow the logic of where this is headed, mm-hmm. here is the solution for climate change. Complete extinction.
Yes.
We get rid of everything that eats meat, walks, breathes, farts, get rid of all that. And ladies and gentlemen, you have the perfect climate
utopia.
Utopia.
Yes.
Absolutely. Let's get rid of all living plants, animals, everything.
The world has gone mad.
No, it really has.
Yeah.
Speaking of going mad, today mm-hmm. impeachment hearings start. Talking about things we can get rid of.
And you thought Cirque du Soleil was only...
Yes. All right. So real quick, 411 on impeachment. What the House does doesn't mean doohickey. They can have. And have you seen the rules of the impeachment? Have you read this? It's completely ridiculous.
I've done the boiled down version, the Reader's Digest version.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, the Trump administration can't provide any witnesses until they're invited by the Democrats. Yeah, just it's that ridiculous. The list goes on. It's just not that. But look, the House has the impeachment hearings. And what does that mean? Great, they impeach him. They say, okay, great, we've impeached the president. Awesome. It then has to go to the Senate, where the Senate has to convict. And it is only when the Senate convicts that the president can remove from office. That ain't going to happen, ladies and gentlemen. So this is going to be the Clinton impeachment that we saw back, you know, during the late 90s, when Clinton was impeached over the Monica Lewinsky issue. It's basically he stays in office and he has an asterisk by his name. It doesn't really mean much. Considering the idiots that we have running Congress, it means even less.
Aren't there several asterisks already there?
I'm sure there are. And a couple of question marks and maybe a hyphen. I'm not sure.
Pluses and minuses.
Exactly. Anyway, that's your rundown for this morning of Insanity Wednesday right here. The world has gone freaking mad. By the way, Arby's is coming out with a meat-based vegetable
just to
rival back. Yes. Meat broccoli. It's coming. It's coming to an Arby's near you. Anyway, we'll be right back after the break. Don't go away.
Follow us on Twitter at Real Investment Advice or go to realinvestmentadvice.com.
And welcome back to this morning, 6:18 on the Real Investment Show. It's the plant-based version today. We're going meatless in the studio.
Meatless Wednesday.
And speaking of meatless, Danny Ratliff joining us this morning.
Wow.
Certified financial planner.
What a great introduction.
Morning, sir. How are you?
Hey, great. How are you?
Been fantastic. We're having a little bit of fun this morning talking about the craziness in this whole meatless movement. We've got to kill dogs and cats now and not have, you know, and get rid of our firstborn and all those type of things. Literal research yesterday, we have to kill the children, dogs, and cats.
What's scary is that somebody actually did the research on this.
Yeah.
you know, it's like
I'm not sure they actually did any research. This is the problem.
Oh yeah, well that could be true as well. You know, but
in the rush to get on the political train,
It was probably the EPA.
Yeah, probably. I bought a watch yesterday.
You bought a watch.
I bought a watch yesterday.
What time?
I don't really do much.
But yet
auctions.
He's not wearing it.
Yeah. If you notice, I bought a watch yesterday.
It's invisible.
The most expensive wristwatch was ever sold was sold yesterday at auction for $31 million.
Really?
For a wristwatch.
$31 million.
A Patek Philippe.
Oh, a Patek Philippe.
Yes. Was sold yesterday.
Don't you have to wind those?
You do. I don't bring mine out very often, but they're
you
okay.
You have one? They're okay. Yeah. It's a bit much for it, but you know, it's interesting. These are the things you see at bull market peaks. You see, you know, people overpaying for assets, people overpaying for auction items, etc. And this is just part of that cycle that we're in. And again, you just kind of see this kind of this interesting, you know, kind of coalition of these different things that are kind of all coming together around, you know, around markets and economies, et cetera. And you've got people paying, you know, a tremendous amount of value, overvaluation for stock ownership. And you've got people willing to pay $31 million for a watch. And I'm not saying that's not, you know, the whole idea of collectibles, obviously, is I can buy this watch and then I can sell it for $62 million. You know, in a couple of years. And this is always the idea. It doesn't always work out that way. But this also just kind of shows that there's people that have really way too much money.
Well, it's like, did you see Christy Teigen? She's the wife of John Legend.
Yes.
So she evidently tweeted that her mother thinks AirPods are AirPods? Disposable. You know, it's still like $160. So she's been roasted all over social media because of this.
She thinks they're disposable?
No, she thinks her. She was making a joke like her mother thinks they're disposable because she loses them constantly. She says she wishes they had a cord.
Gotcha.
And people just went after her. But, you know, talk about, you know, spending money. And then people, you know, most of the comments were, this is the reason we need to redistribute wealth.
Right.
Okay, come on. Look, I get it. Maybe it's a little bit out of touch. But well, I think she's trying to be funny.
Well, yeah, I know. But it is the issue. You know, we do have this big divergence of wealth in the economy. And, you know, this is why we've had tremendous conversations over the last couple of months about the value of capitalism and the importance of having a capitalistic economy, because it gives everybody an opportunity to do something, right? You can you can work for somebody else, or you can take advantage of the opportunity, build your own business, and build success. But when you have stuff like this, people buying $31 million watches, et cetera, this is why people think that capitalism is broken.
Well, but that's one guy buying a $31 million
right.
watch.
I know,
that's not everybody.
Exactly. But this is why people think it's broken. The, you know, the rich 1%, they have all the wealth. I have nothing, and I can't have anything because they have all the money. And it's not true at all. You have the opportunity to
that's
do
right.
anything you want, but you've got to get off your duff and go actually step out there into the cold and try to take advantage of it, right? But when you have these stories, you know, like Christy Teigen, like this guy buying a watch for $31 million, this is why these are things that hit the headlines, and this is what there's so much, you know, kind of anger in the economy right now over all this. This is just kind of bubbles to the surface.
Well, you create this woe is me society, and that's unfortunate that we have this. And the one thing you mentioned that I think that should resonate with everybody is that the opportunity. Everybody has an opportunity. Mm-hmm. Right. And you got to get started somewhere. And look, there's so many good stories of these guys who are wealthy, who could go buy that $31 million watch, who maybe they're not.
Right.
But they started from the bottom. And a lot of these people, you know, a lot of successful people, I see they're hard workers. They all have one trait in common, and that's hard work.
Right.
And that's what drives me nuts is about all these people saying redistribute wealth. Well, get off your tail and go. You know, I mean, that's what you got to do.
Redistribute wealth by showing up and building wealth. And then you have part of the wealth and you've now redistributed it, because you have to take it from somebody.
That's right.
All wealth is taken from somebody else. It doesn't just organically appear. So if you want to redistribute wealth, get out there, take the risk. This is the big thing, right? In order to take advantage of a capitalist economy, you've got to be willing to take the risk. You've got to be willing to step out there and go, you know what? I may fall completely on my butt and fail. That's a risk. But the reward of that is that if you succeed, you're going to build a lot more wealth than you would just simply working in a job every day and doing that. Look, I've got some great friends of mine. They used to work for a major oil and gas company here in town. They have worked there for years as a big company. They were treated very well by the company. There's nothing, they weren't upset with their jobs, nothing like that. They just saw an opportunity. They go, there's some opportunities that we're seeing as geologists that the company's overlooking. They got together. They formed a little company. They went out. They went to a private equity company, got some backing. They're very successful now. But they took a risk. What was the risk? They left their job where they had a steady paycheck, 401k plans, benefits, all that. They left that all behind. They took what money they'd saved up. They invested it in their business. They went and took the risk of getting private equity. They worked out. They got it. They went out and they bought properties. They bought and started drilling wells. Tons of risk there that they could hit a dry well, that a whole variety of risks. There was a million things that could have gone wrong that would have destroyed their company, yet they succeeded. And because they've succeeded, they are all now much wealthier than they were before just working for a job. But that's the risk you've got to take. But that's the beauty of capitalism. Now, here's the other point. They have now redistributed wealth. They have taken wealth from somebody else, their former employer, because that was opportunities missed by that employer that they now have advantage of. And they have now redistributed wealth by that process.
So, but it could go even further than that. They're redistributing wealth by the wealth they've created. They're actually buying things. They're doing different things they wouldn't, which are employing and redistributing wealth in other ways.
And that's the other thing people forget is that, you know, people berate Bill Gates as an example. Well, he's the rich 1%. He's the second richest guy in the world next to Amazon. Think about it for just a moment. Does Bill Gates deserve to be a billionaire? And I'm going to tell you why he deserves to be a billionaire. If you go to work today, do you use Microsoft Excel, Microsoft Word, Microsoft Outlook?
You can't get around it.
To do your job. How much money does your business make or the company that you work for make by using the products of Microsoft? Microsoft Windows, Word, Excel, blah, 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 right? How many times do you do a presentation that you use to use PowerPoint to make a presentation? Here's the point about this. Does Bill Gates deserve to be a billionaire? Absolutely. How many millionaires and billionaires has that guy made in this country just by the people he employs, the all the other companies that build products off of what he has, all the other stuff that happens? But then most importantly, how many billions of dollars worth of business have companies made being more efficient by using his products? Bill Gates has changed the way the world works in business. Does he deserve be a billionaire? Absolutely.
Why do we even care?
You know, that is the other point.
The dude's done great. Fantastic. You know, more power to him. But, you know, just like with what he's done, he's created a ton of jobs. And so your buddies who left the mm-hmm. security of a great company and went out and started their own, they didn't just, you know, go in and do this on their own. They employed people.
Yeah.
And so that's the other part of this. And so it's all this trickle effect, and it's all tied together. And so that's what's so frustrating when I hear this redistribute wealth. Well, there's a lot of ways you can do it, and it's, you know, part of it stepping outside and getting to work.
Well, again, so a lot of this angst is coming, obviously, from the millennial class coming up. They're saddled with college debt,
mm-hmm.
And they're complaining because they can't get a $100,000 a year job in a corner office right out of school. Here's the most regretted college majors that millennials are taking.
Well, I want to hear this.
English and foreign languages. Leading reasons for regret, impractical and limited job opportunities. Biological and physical sciences. Hard to find a job without advanced degrees or licenses. In other words, if you just have a bachelor's in biology, it's hard to get a job if you've basically got to be a PhD, pretty much. Getting an education degree. And when I was in college, this was called the MRS degree. Danny's looking at me. He doesn't know it.
Enlighten me.
You know what it is, right?
Absolutely, I know what it is.
When I was in college, and look, this is not, I'm not saying this to be sexist or anything else. This is when I was in college back in the day where we still used stone tablets and chisels.
I know where you're going.
It was mostly females mm-hmm. that got education degrees, and they were there for an MRS degree. They were just looking to get married, and that's why they were in college. So that's back then, long time ago.
True story, though.
Not the case.
Yeah. I can't wait to see the emails you get today.
So, that's why I clarified it, quantifying.
We'll get way that back one clip, though.
Social sciences and law, 29%. Too general and practical, hard to find a job without further studies. Communications was the fifth most regretted major, too general. The least regretted college majors, not surprisingly, the ones that have practical applications, computer science and mathematics. Business, engineering, health administration, and assisting but low job satisfaction with that degree. Health sciences and technologies, also easier to get a job, but low satisfaction. So the best job to get a job, like to walk out of college and get a job, is anything that has engineering attached to it. So computer engineering, mechanical engineering, civil engineering. If you want a job right out of college, get an engineering degree. All right, quick break. We'll come back more with Danny Ratliff. We got to get some serious stuff here. Don't go away. Thunder.
The Real Investment Advice blog.
It's required reading for the informed investor.
Catch it today at realinvestmentadvice.com.
And welcome back. 6:34 this morning. I'm Real Science Roberts. Danny Ratliff joined us on the Real Investment Show. Our annual Christmas party is right around the corner for our clients, and sending out our we're gonna fashion ourselves after Jay-Z this year, and we're gonna send out invites to all of our VIP guests, which will include a Rolex watch and a bottle of Ace champagne. Seriously, so Jay-Z goes back to our conversation earlier about people with too much money, right? He sent Rolexes and a champagne to his VIP guest as the VIP invite. Like, hey, come to my party, please. Here's a Rolex.
I'm still waiting for mine in the mail. What the heck?
I know, right? I didn't get mine either. No, we're not doing that here at our office either. But
we're using Timexes.
But Casios. One of the recipients, he says, this rich stuff, to use the other word, this rich stuff is getting out of control. So pretty much nails it on the head.
Would that be considered redistribution of Jay-Z's wealth?
It could be. Of course, he's sending it to other rich people. So it's just kind of rolling around in the rich.
From Peter to Paul.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Hey, you know what, though? Good for him. Here's a guy, yeah. Jay-Z, yeah. Right? Really came up from nothing. He's now a billionaire. Super smart. Just a terrific promoter. Whether you like him or not, it's irrelevant. But he has done a fantastic job of building wealth.
Successful and, guy. Well, he's diversified outside of what his bread and butter was, which was music, right?
Absolutely. And he's done fantastic. So, you know, this is the whole point about capitalism at work. Here's a guy that came from nothing. And built a lot of wealth for himself.
And he married well.
And he married, and that helps too.
Yeah,
obviously, I married well. She just didn't have any money. So,
but she's productive.
She's terrific. She's awesome. I just didn't, you know, she didn't have like $1 billion that I could marry into. I thought I was in, right? Because her dad was the president of Whataburger, right?
Yeah.
And then she kind of didn't inform me that he left Whataburger to go to Pollo Loco.
Well, as you have discovered,
yes,
the best dowry is not always in dollars.
I know, Whataburgers.
I'm trying to help you out here.
I know, right? So anyway, yesterday Donald Trump had a conversation, and this will make Danny happy because he's a big tax guy. But yesterday Donald Trump had a conversation at the Economic Club presentation, and everybody kind of expected he was going to talk about trade and all this other stuff, and he really didn't address trade at all, and that's kind of why the market sold off yesterday. Markets were up about 12 points yesterday morning, expecting that he was going to have this speech, and he was going to say basically, hey, we're concluding the trade war, we're going to remove the tariffs, and that's why stocks were rallying yesterday morning. They sold off late in the afternoon because after he gave the speech, he said nothing about trade or tariffs or anything else. But what he did say, and right at the end of the day, this was when we got this little bump right at the end of the day. He said that they're exploring cutting the rate on tax rate on the middle class tax to 15%. So remember back in December of 2017, we cut the corporate tax rates from that onerous 35%, the highest tax rate in the world, which was complete bull hockey, down to 21%. Of course, we don't have a VAT tax, and which we already had one of the lowest tax rates in the world, but also, more importantly, corporations don't pay that tax. That's the statutory tax rate. The actual tax rate that corporations paid on profits prior to the tax cut was about 15% on average. It's now down to 10% on average. In fact, IBM just recently reported zero on their tax rate.
Zero.
Zero. Amazon had $3 billion, $3.5 billion, something like that in revenue with zero taxes. So there you go. But anyway, so one of the complaints that I've had is that the tax cut didn't really work to a great degree like it was expected because it was targeted at corporations rather than individuals. So that message has now resonated, and Washington's been trying to figure out why we didn't have this great resurgence in economic activity after the tax cuts, because you didn't really give people that much more money. They may have saved a little bit of taxes around the edges, but again, consumers are already living paycheck to paycheck. So if I cut their taxes on a monthly basis, let's say I save an extra $100 a month on taxes, right? Say payroll taxes or whatever it is. It just kind of gets absorbed into the daily spending. What consumers do well with boosting the economy is a tax refund, right? You give them a big refund in April or May, and they go out and they spend it all at once. And so they get, you kind of get this economic pop right after tax because everybody runs out and spends their refund.
Well, I think what you're getting at, though, is not necessarily that people aren't getting tax cuts, because we've seen a lot of clients who did actually get a cut, but it's just what they're doing with the funds, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, what he's talking about here is, and this was something that Larry Kudlow had hinted to the Washington Post, president is pushing for potentially a 15% tax rate for the American middle class. I don't think it's going to happen. The reason I don't think it will happen, I mean, it's going to be a great idea that he's going to try to get this done. But the problem is you've got to get this through the House. The House is controlled by Democrats, and I can't really see the Democrats lining up to help Trump at all prior to the election.
Yeah, so he's going to do everything he can to stimulate the economy, especially going into the election year. You know, if you remember a couple of weeks or probably about a month ago, he floated the idea of reducing payroll taxes,
right?
Reducing capital gains tax. And I think payroll taxes probably has more teeth as far as helping Absolutely. Out the overall economy, because that's going to help everybody. And, and it's going to be, you know, that's going to throw in a blanket in the sense that, you know, you're going to really, it's not going to target the rich, not going to target corporations. Everybody's going to get that tax break, and that would be seen probably very quickly in the economy.
No, absolutely, it would. And now the only other problem is that you'll see it in the economy temporarily, but remember, everything gets absorbed.
Yep.
You know, tax cuts are great for 1 year, and then it gets absorbed into the economy. And again, we compare everything on a year-over-year basis. So if earnings are $1 1 year, and then we boost them to $1.10 next year, the next year they're $1.10, your growth rate was zero because we compare it on a year-over-year basis. So that's why we say things get absorbed very quickly into the economy, because we compare everything on a year-over-year basis. But again, I think the bigger issue is I can't see the Democrats, you know, pushing, you know, to help him try to get a tax cut done before the election.
Yep.
They control the House because they don't want, obviously, I mean, you know, they don't want him going to say, hey, I got you a tax cut. See, you should vote for me. But this could also be a very good game for Trump. He could be setting the Democrats up here in terms of strategic plans, hey, I, you know, before you go elect all these Democrats, remember that I was trying to get you a tax cut, you know, earlier this year, and they wouldn't pass it for you. So it's all in the Democrats. So it's actually a good strategic plan, I think, that could help him into the election.
Well, and I think that's probably what he's doing with the Fed as well. It'll be interesting to see what Jerome Powell says today. He has talk today and tomorrow.
We're gonna get. Let's back up real quick. If you missed it yesterday, at the same speech where he's talking about these 15% tax cuts, he's back bashing the Fed, saying that we need negative rates just like Europe. Go ahead.
Give me some of that money is actually what he said with negative yields. So he's going after Powell. And look, they could be buddy-buddy behind the scenes. Who knows? But it's strategic genius.
Right.
In a lot of ways, because if the economy goes bad, something happens, he just points the finger at them and says, that wasn't me.
Yep.
Here's what I was trying to do.
Yep.
And so, you know, I think there's a handful of those things that we'll see happen likely, that'll likely happen. But this could be, you know, briefly, this could be an economic boom. It's funny. I saw a headline yesterday, Lance, that said, trade talks are breaking down. Main reasons, tariffs. I thought, what?
Yeah.
Well, it's all about tariffs. What are you talking about?
Well, look, you can't really, you know, blame journalists for making stupid headlines because they really, they don't know better. But yes, it's all about tariffs.
It's just funny how that all, they articulate things sometimes.
But look, I mean, look, Trump is playing a good game here with the Fed. Don't disagree with you. He's done very well pushing him into a corner, getting him to cut rates, do things that probably the Fed shouldn't have done. And we'll probably come back and wind up regret this later. They cut rates too soon and too much. And yes, and yes, look, you may stimulate the bull market here for a little bit longer. You may stimulate the economy for another few months because you cut rates. The problem is that you're still, whenever you do things like rate cuts or quantitative easing, et cetera, all you do is pull forward future consumption. So when you pull forward that consumption, because consumption is what makes up economic growth, when you pull forward that consumption, there's a void in the future that has to be filled. And at some point, you wind up to the point to where you can't fill that void, which is why you get a recession. The problem by pulling forward it, by pulling forward, using these tools now to pull forward consumption 10 years into a bull cycle, is that now you've got far fewer tools to deal with to combat the next recession when it occurs, which could potentially make the next recession worse. The other issue is that wanting negative rates is not a good thing. Negative rates have destroyed the European banking system. It has destroyed economies across the board. They're poor and their middle class are far worse off than we are. Negative rates are not a good thing. Again, negative rates may give you a little bit of boost in the short term, but you're playing a very difficult long-term game that's going to come back and bite you. And that's what Europe's already figuring out. And, you know, us wanting the same thing here is not really a great thing. Be right back after the break with Danny Ratliff. You're listening to The Real Investment Show. Don't go away.
Catch the best of The Real Investment Show anytime, anywhere from Stitcher Smart Radio. Download podcasts of The Real Investment Show from Stitcher.com.
And welcome back to the show this morning, 6:48 on the Real Investor Show. Danny Ratliff joining me this morning. So, Danny, what's happening on your side of the world?
You know what drives me nuts is headlines and fake news.
Right.
So, there's a new headline out that says that they interviewed or surveyed 2,000 people, mm-hmm. and from 18 to like 60, and they determined that you need $421,000 to retire.
Sweet.
But these are people 18 to 60. Actually, they said determined that you need $421,789. Very precise
number,
might I add. But people who aren't even in retirement are a major factor in this.
Right. Well, so the question is I need $421,879 to retire today.
Mm-hmm.
Where?
Beats me.
Anywhere. So just anywhere. And yeah. So that's assuming that I can live on whatever return that's going to. I'm sure they have a return number, 6%, 8%. If I can just get 6% or 8% a year, then I can retire on that number.
I live in a shoebox and not have any health care expenses.
Look, well, actually, I just wrote an article on this on Monday. I don't know if you saw it.
I don't read your stuff anymore, Lance.
I know.
I'm kidding.
So, but I was actually right because there was an article out showing how much it required to retire in every state. So if you want to retire in Texas, you need $789,1202, whatever it is. But it was a very precise number. Again, this is exactly what you need to retire. Here's the problem with this, right? I'm 18 years old. I've got 700,000, 400,000, whatever the number is. That means I can retire today on that number. The problem that we always forget is you have to adjust that for 30 years into the future. When I was 18, 19, 20 years old, me and Moses were hanging out, you know, down by the dock, drinking some wine out of a wood cup, watching some guy on a boat get fish.
I think it was a goat skin.
Maybe a goat skin.
Flash.
Some guy walking around with a beard saying, hey, you know, I have bread and fish here in this basket. Let's feed everybody. Back then, right? The cost of living was relatively cheap. Honestly, you know, when my parents bought a brand new car, it was $6,000. For a four-door Chevy Impala, right? Our house that we lived in was 1,200 square feet. It was a $30,000 house with, you know, quarter-acre lot, that type of thing, right? So cost of living back then was substantially less. So if I had $1 million back then, interest rates on 10-year treasuries were 12%. I can live on $120,000 a year pretty easily. Today, that $1 million will generate $18,000 a year, right? Because we're at 1.89% in interest. So I can generate $18,000 on every million off treasuries, even if I throw it in the market and get 6% a year, right? So now I'm making $60,000 a year. The average income requirement to live pretty much anywhere with a modicum standard of living is going to be between $60,000 and $70,000 a year. So the point here is that $1 million today isn't what it was 30 years ago. And so when you look at these things that say, oh, you could retire, you know, if you just had $700,000 in the bank, you can retire easy, right? Well, yeah, but in 30 years, that's going to be $1.4 million or it's going to be $2 million because you have to adjust for inflation. This is one thing that these are all feel-good articles, right? If you've got $300,000 in the bank, man, you're doing great. You can't retire on that.
Well, they're not even feel good. They're hopeful, especially if you're asking people who aren't retired. So go to realinvestmentadvice.com, go to the blogs, and go see what Lance wrote. There's actually a really neat map on there that gives you, and it shows you the disparity and the difference between all the different states on how much it actually costs to retire and to live. Mm-hmm. But we can go a lot further than that. You know, when we do financial plans, we talk about what we assume some of the worst case scenarios.
Right.
And so we'll say, hey, what happens if the first 2 years you retire, market crashes? What happens if healthcare expenses are a little more expensive than you anticipated, which is why we inflate those differently? So when you see these numbers, so what I did is I actually Googled. I said, okay, how much do I need to retire? The number is all over the board. Right. 1.7 million pops up. You need, 700,000. You need 421. And so when you look at this, I can see why, the average investor said put blinders on and think, oh my gosh. Yeah. First of all, it's an unachievable amount, many people feel. And second of all, it's just, how do you get there and what do you do? And so that's what we do as planners, is help people through these and kind of create that roadmap. And so I think it's really difficult, though, looking at these types of things. And so that's what drives me nuts when you interview 2,000 people that have never even been there.
Yeah.
And say, how much do you need?
Well, and the other thing, too, is that, when you interview millennials, right, and this is a lot of these articles written for millennials, right? If you're 20 years old, if you just save $14 a day, you'll have $1 million by the time you retire, and you can retire. And this whole FIRE movement, right, financial independence, retire early, hey, just save up a couple hundred grand in the bank and retire. Be done. Quit working, right? Just go do what you want to do, travel the world. You just have to, eat rice and beans and live out of a very small, vehicle or, live in a really small apartment, et cetera. Look, my goal for retirement, and I presume this is my goal, is not that different than most other people's, is that I want to retire in the same kind of lifestyle that I live now, right? Danny has 3 kids. I've got 4 kids. I've got a wife, all this stuff.
Expensive things.
They're expensive things. But you got to have a house. You got to have a place to live. You could rent, right? So those are choices. Those are fine choices, right? Renting is... I'm all for renting, right? I'm not a big believer in ownership of houses. They're very costly to own and maintain. But the point, though, is that I don't want to significantly downgrade my lifestyle in retirement to just get by, right? So this is why you have to really analyze this stuff and think about, and this is what Danny does a great job with doing financial planning, is looking at really what your lifestyle is going to look like, adjust that for inflation, lower the rate of return requirement that you're going to get off investments just in case. You don't get 8% a year. You don't get 6% a year. Markets don't compound on a regular basis. 1 year of losses can wipe out years of your gains and destroy the effect of compounding. It really sets you well far back on your goal. And this is why we talk a lot about hedging risk and protecting capital, because not participating on the upside, missing out on some of the upside, that's okay, right? Markets go up more than they go down, but a down market will devastate your retirement. That's the thing you need to worry about avoiding the most. And it's one thing that most people don't, right?
No, they don't. And I think the big thing with these numbers are they're very misleading, because everybody's different. I've told people with a couple hundred thousand dollars, hey, you look great. You're going to be able to retire fine. I've told people with $5-6 million that, hey, it's not going to cut it. It's not. And they look at you and think, what? Well, I mean, look, you're either retiring too young, you spend too much money. So everybody is different.
Absolutely.
Every scenario deserves a customized plan to sit down, to review, to understand what your true cost of living are, to understand, okay, what are your needs, what are your wants, what are your wishes, and how do we put those all together and make sure it works for you and your family? And I think that's the important part about the plan, and that's why these numbers can be so misleading and drive me absolutely bonkers.
Well, you know, one thing you brought up, though, was healthcare and retirement.
Yeah.
By the way, the U.S. has now achieved a new worldwide ranking. We rank like 20th in math, like 27th or something like this in science. I mean, education-wise, we're way down the list. I mean, countries like Estonia, you know, kick our butt education-wise. But we have now ranked number one in the world for something. We have achieved greatness. We are the most obese nation on the planet. Which is why we overweight healthcare stocks in our portfolio, exactly for this reason. In fact, one of our best performing REITs this year.
And are buying healthcare facilities.
They are healthcare facilities. That's right. Up 60% this year. Love this company. But it's because we're doing great. Make America fat again.
I have a long range investment tip.
Yeah.
Anything that has to do with the art of dentistry, because these millennials, they're not eating, they're drinking their milk, they're going to lose their teeth.
Oh, yeah. That's actually a good point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they're going to lose their teeth because of the...
Not drinking milk.
Ah. Yeah. Yeah.
Interesting. The things that we do, trying to save the planet, we'll all be toothless and vegetarians.
Well, the other aspect of that is, guess what doesn't cover dentistry? Medicare.
That's right.
So, you know, Medicare doesn't cover quite a bit. In fact, you know, it doesn't cover vision, teeth, hearing. So we're going to have a lot of people bumping around. And
blind, toothless, millennial, boomer, retirees.
Gumming one another to death.
You know, the good thing in this is that, you know, if that is the case, we won't have to worry about zombies because they can't bite you.
Toothless zombies. There's a concept.
Exactly.
Hey, Richard, write that into your script.
They just hang around. They can't bite you and spread the disease, so it's all good.
Here we are worried about longevity risk, but nobody's going to be able to eat or see their food to get to it. So hope we don't have to go back to hunters and gatherers.
Population shrinking. Problem solved.
There you go. Can't even increase the population of zombies at that point. Anyway, but yeah, so, but yeah, but it's important, though. The healthcare, you know, this whole idea of, you know, we don't eat well, we don't exercise. Healthcare costs and retirement are going to be astronomical for a large number of people. And this is one of the things that also are not factored into this idea that, oh, you can just retire. If you have $400,000, then you can retire. It doesn't include all the things that happen that is called life, right? Stuff happens, and, you know, healthcare costs are going to devastate a lot. And this, I rail against this whole FIRE movement all the time. You know, it's a young couple, 35 years old. They save up money and they retire and they're going to travel the world, right? It's all great. Until you decide to have a kid. Until you decide that, hey, you know, we can't live out of a van with our kid, right? Now we have to buy a house. Well, here's the problem with this whole FIRE movement, retire early, that nobody's talking about. I retire at 35, quit my job, leave. I'm retired for 5, 6, 7, 8 years, whatever it is. Eventually, I'm going to get bored traveling around doing all this, or I'll decide to have children, or, you know, I want to be part of life again. I then come back. I now no longer have a relative skill set to the employment market. Now I become virtually unemployable. I'm now out of money. And this has a very terrible ending for a lot of these people that nobody, but again, this is part of what, once you have experience in life and you go through these things, you look back at these young people and go, you're making a huge mistake. But, you know, you can't tell young people anything. They're going to figure it out themselves. So,
hey, look, I'm not going to knock it if I could do it. I'd love to be there, right? But I think you make some very valid points that you're missing out on some crucial development years, especially in a career.
Absolutely. All right, wraps up the show for the day. Be sure to go by our website. Our latest blog post is out today. Michael Leibowitz wrote an article about, is impact investing right for you? That's the new rage, right? We gotta be impactful with our investing. But is it right for you? That's articles on the website now at realinvestmentadvice.com. And, of course, send us your questions, comments, emails. And if you got any questions for Danny, happy to help you out at all with your financial planning needs. Realinvestmentadvice.com. Have a great day. Chris Salcedo coming right up.